Yes, I was mentioning from the song "When I Call on Jesus." It was a time when my faith was challenged, and it was a time when I need rescuing. I thought it was her that needed rescuing, but there is a part in the song that says, you know, I am hiding away from the world. And in some ways, I took that and said, my daughter is getting what she needs. She's unconscious. She's been unconscious for months, and consciously unconscious by the hospital. You know, there's a name for that. But I saw her hiding away from the world, not necessarily hiding, but getting what she needed. And the song, "When I Call on Jesus for Rescue," I think it was me that needed rescue, in the sense that, some of you know, I couldn't even pray. I didn't even know how to pray. And I had a ton of amazing supporters around me. Kanye was there almost every day. I had a lot of people who I knew supported and prayed for me throughout. And so I was just, in a way, basking in the ambience of that song. That song really took me. And this is why I have my wonderful eagle today, because I had a song, a book that says, that was given to me by Connie, she didn't remember, but it said, "Even eagles can soar." And
she gave it to me.
Oh, she gave it to you?
No, she gave it to you, and you gave it after you read it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And but that is like, I was soaring on faith. I was soaring on the backs of everybody else. It was about a captain flying a plane, and you know, we do have to have faith in the captain and his co-pilots, but it's just about faith. And this is where we are today. Today is about on the second chapter, the use and power of faith. And with that introduction, you know, what do you all think is faith? Just a quick answer.
I think it's holding the space for the possibility.
Okay, one person said holding the space for the possibility. Any other ideas?
The Beloved calls it soft willingness.
And he said, the Beloved calls it soft willingness. Yes.
I think it's great expectations.
Great expectations, Bethany. Felicia had said,
holding the space. To allow for the possibility.
Yes. Matthew.
My definition of faith has evolved over the years, and now, to me, faith is a certain knowingness and trust that it's going to be all right. I don't need to know the details.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's just, I'm there. And
yes.
I rely on this to persevere and become unattached to the outcome.
Yes.
To allow that whatever happens is exactly the best and the highest divine for all involved.
Absolutely. So Matthew said, faith is about knowingness and trust. He said a lot more, which is so intriguing, but I could only remember two sentences at a time. But thank you. Anybody else?
That's just a trusting.
Yeah. Lorianne says trusting. All right. All those are, and David?
That's a wisdom from both sides of the world.
David says, wisdom from both sides of the world.
Both sides now.
Both sides now. And thank you very much. Everything is exactly correct. I will, however, follow through on Matthew, where in the book it actually talked about, Emerson said, we see the universe as solid fact, but God sees the universe as liquid way. And that is about consciousness. So it's not only what we see as solid means that that is what is there. God sees everything in a nice flow. Everything keeps evolving. Everything opens up. My talk today would focus on what faith is. So we start where Connie had left off, where she talked earlier on the first chapter, where the great secret of life. And last 2 weeks was very amazing because we had a chance to do some after discussion in the group, and it was really, really good. So coming off of the one mind and one spirit philosophy, and we know that it's all one mind. We know that this one mind, we call it God, we call it spirit, we call it Buddha, we call it universe, we call it everlasting, we call it eternal. We call this one mind so many things. But in this one mind, that's all we got, right? So we use it. We use it consciously and we use it unconsciously. We think into it. We use it by putting our thoughts out there, and we just automatically do things like that. So we put our thoughts out there and said, man, I wish this could happen. Just that statement alone, the universe is already conspiring. I wish this could happen. Because the word is the beginning. The word is the thought. So you think something and you put it out there and it's like, yep, I heard it. I got it. All right? So every time we use our thought, every time we make a declarative statement, or even sometimes silly statements, it's our word. It's the truth of the moment. And most times it's the truth of what we believe in. We think this into the mind. There is no other way where our words can go. Our words are the mind. Our words are in the mind. Our words are the one mind. So we have to see ourselves not as what I'm saying and something else, but knowing that everything is in one big glob together. And the universe conspires in so many different ways to pull and push and do things to bring what we request into our manifestation, because we love to see our universe as solid, right? So Lorianne and I were talking in the car coming in, and we were saying that things can happen so quickly. The universe conspires. We're going on a long drive, and we were talking about falling asleep and making things going kind of bad. However, it wasn't about her accident or anything. We were just talking about, things to pay attention to on the road. And right at that time, a truck swerved and came into our lane a little and then went back. And she said, we can do what we can do within our control. But that was not in my control, the truck swerving, and I said, didn't tell her that, but I said, yes, the universe is conspiring to bring things into action, whether it was looking good for us or not good for us. So as I said, there is no justice or injustice, it just is. However, we want to make sure that our outcome is pleasing, is helpful, is useful, and it will enhance our living. It will enhance life. So the truck swerving into our lane, that was not life enhancing, right? Didn't feel good, and that's where we have a strong cue about where we want to put our faith, right? It must feel good. It must be life enhancing, and it must come from a source of I'm going to use the word feel good again. However, the opposite can happen. We can say, we want to have a safe trip on the road. And guess what? People are putting on the indicators and people are slowing down when need to. And, you know, we don't have people driving crazy and then we have more tension and we feel more alert on the road. The universe is conspiring to bring our good to us, all right? So look at our life, our living, our expression on a day-to-day basis as the universe conspiring. But also look at it as if you want to put your word out into it, if you want to have faith or you want to have something come into your manifestation and you're not sure how to have it done, then we come to the point where, okay, let's talk about faith. And this is where we are going to be now. So on page 22, Ernest Holmes talked about the path, consciousness as the pathway to faith. So I'm going to read a quote. We said that consciousness, which is our thought, something we know, feelings, thinking, is basic to everything, and that we are surrounded by a divine and universal intelligence which receives the impress of our thought and acts upon it creatively. For mind is the power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and ever more he takes. So our consciousness has a big deal to do with our faith. Connie talked about knowing the rules last week. When we know the rules of the game, then in a way we are ahead. And we are not ahead of others competitively because we know the rules, because everyone knows the rules. Some are just more present, some are just more aware. So it's not about competitive personalization of where we are, but knowing the rules, knowing what to expect. When we know the rules, we no longer become afraid because we know what to expect. So when I say we know what to expect is like the laws, the gravitational laws. If I drop the pen, it will fall. That's the law of gravity, right? And so faith. Ernest Holmes thinks that faith is that the law acts on faith, or faith is a law, and I'm going to talk about that. Maybe I'll just do that right now. So he talked about faith as a law. He said, "I believe that faith acts like a law because it is operated on by a law." Haldane, which is one of the great biologists, had mentioned that all laws in the universe operate as though they were intelligent, operating mathematically as law. So when we say, you know, I don't feel it, but I have faith that I know it's going to happen, there's a mathematical something. You're more mathematically inclined than me because you went to the physics aspect of it last 2 weeks ago. But there's always something that is conspiring to make things happen. We put a seed in the ground. What happens? The earth and the seed interact. Where's the law? Who acts upon whom? Right? I don't know. Maybe a biologist may know, maybe scientists may know, but there are things that I just don't need to know. There are things that I could just say, okay, if I could only find the faith to believe that when I put the seed in the ground and I do what I need to do by putting it in, you know, where it can get some sun and maybe every once in a while watering it. that it would grow. And if it doesn't, then this is where some non-resistance come in. It's like, okay, if in my position, when I plant things, I do not have a green thumb, maybe that should not be an affirmative statement from me.
but just when, logical
observance.
But when I plant something, and I'm a lot into non-resistance these days, when I plant something and I do all the best that I can do, I just let it go. And at the outcome, I said, if I don't see a dead plant, or if I don't see a plant that refuses to grow, they call it failure to thrive. If I could see that as an outcome and know that that is possibly an outcome, then I would do the best that I can, making sure that, yes, that outcome is not what I want. I want to see nice green foliage and all that stuff. But just releasing it and letting go of the stress of trying to control what is taking place with the soil and the seed. Another thing I read in the book, they talked about if you can release the need to see a trophy at the end for maybe runners, or maybe people who are very competitive, or people who likes to get something very tangible as the rat race sort of continues. If you can release that and just run the race, then at some point you've become non-resistant. So you'll run it even though you know you may not get the trophy. And that is a big deal for me, because that puts me in the space of, I don't have to do it all. I don't have to know how it would all happen. And if at the end I didn't get the trophy, then so be it. I ran it the way I wanted to run. So let's know the rules. Let's know that once we put our thoughts out there, we're working with the one mind, that fear is not a factor anymore. And he talked about the consciousness of Jesus. And, you know, he in the book, Ernest Holmes talked about how, you know, Jesus got this little kid to help him with, you know, the five loaves and fishes, or the loaves and five fishes. He raised Lazarus from the dead. He showed tax collectors, who were really bad, sort of bad people, bad guys at the time, how to really do their work, how to get the money for their taxes. He resurrected himself from the dead. And, quote, and they said, no good thing can come out from Lazarus, from Nazareth, because this man has permitted an evil woman, a prostitute, to bathe his feet. So you're talking about, I think, was Mary or Martha. I can't remember. But he allowed a prostitute to wash his feet. And she bathed his feet with her tears, and she dried his feet with her golden hair. So one wonders, okay, so why did Jesus, the man... And Ernest Holmes, just going back one quick way, Ernest Holmes talked about Jesus as being, if in our day, now daytime, that in Mexico there are about 5 or 15,000 Jesuses. We just don't say Jesus, we say Jesus. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. So he wanted to normalize Jesus the man. But he really honed in on the Christ consciousness of Jesus, the consciousness of knowing and feeling, and just the fact that I ask you to really listen to the last sound of the bells, I call them bells. That is about going within and knowing and feeling, and knowing that there is a sound still that you have not heard, but you want to connect with it. You are connecting with it. And in connecting with it, you connect into the silence. Mm-hmm. And when one connects into the silence, there we are. When we can be open, when we can be non-resistant, when we can just allow ourselves to be who we are, even if it is to wash the feet of someone that you don't like, or some, you know, or to do something out of the ordinary. Let me be who I am. And, you know, we talked about being children again. We talked about the consciousness of children, the consciousness of 4 and 5 year olds, where they know all these things that we are talking about. So when you talk to kids, you don't talk to them in a way that they won't understand. Talk to them from where you are coming from. Talk from your understanding, because from your understanding, they would also get it from their own understanding. So as we are all here today, we are here because we are here to reconnect with a particular truth within our own selves, whether you hear it in a song, whether you hear it from another person's conversation. I just believe that nothing happens, by chance. The universe conspires constantly. And so Maya Angelou, you know, he talked a little bit about love, and this is why Jesus was doing all that he was doing, is because mainly he had love in his heart for his brothers. He had a certain amount of feeling, of knowing, of embracing for others. And so he was mentioning, Ernest Holmes was mentioning, that we have too many semantics. We try to cut down other people's conversation. We try to dissect and criticize other people's ways of doing things. But I loved what Maya Angelou had talked about when she made this statement, and maybe I had said these two words, this statement, last 2 weeks as well. It is not what you say. It is not even what you do, but it is how you make others feel. And when you come back to your own faith, it is not so much what you say and do, but when you feel what you feel, then that is the fastest way to be in alignment, in connection with your own core source. And as you're in connection, then there is no fear, because that is, you know the rules. And the rules are, it's one mind. And if it's one mind, then everything would conspire to meet my needs. Everything conspire to meet your needs. And guess what? Because we are interrelational, we are helping each other meet each other's needs. Whether it looks as though it's on the good side, or whether it's like, what, Trump, right? So we meet everybody's needs, and it looks crazy right now. We can't understand why things happen, but this is an interrelational, because it is one. It is one. And don't ask me to explain. I just know it from my heart as the truth. There are things I'm still struggling with, but I know it. I have a deeper knowing, like Matthew said. He's evolved into knowing, and he's evolved into feeling. And this is where we need to be, into knowing that at the end, putting our intentions out there, that the universe conspires to bring my intention into manifestation. All right, so when some talk about affirmative prayer being part of the faith walk, then he went on to talk about what faith is. So let me quickly do that. So he said, faith is a mental attitude. It can be consciously, definitely, and deliberately induced. All right? Then he went on to say, faith, then, must deal with a law in nature, or itself be nature. That one I didn't know. So he said, let me explain this. These talks that I'm giving are preliminary to the course I want you to take, because I would like these 2,000 people here before me to be your own practitioners. He was a good salesman, by the way. So he said, you don't have to do it professionally, but you want to practice for yourself and your family. You want betterment, knowing the rules. You want greater happiness, more success, better health, and above everything else, the thing that intrigues me is not the science following, but the fact that there is such a power available, the ever-available power of God, is the greatest good on earth. And then he went on to say the statement I read before, which said, now faith either is the law or follows a law or is operated on by a law. And so it's up in the air. He doesn't know for real what happens when a seed and the earth comes together. And he doesn't know if faith is the law or is faith nature. If faith is nature, we have to take it that it is something that we are thinking about, because that's how mind goes into action. When we create a thought, then everything starts moving. When we speak our word, then it goes into tribble, or, you know, it just moves so much faster. And so I'm thinking, my own personal belief is that faith is nature as well. Faith is just like you or me. It's an expression of God, because it quickly, as being in the one mind, it quickly, as soon as we put our desires, our yearning out there, then something happens. Sometimes we don't understand it, we don't realize it, or sometimes it takes 100 years, like a lot of things in my life. But there is one thing that never diminishes, is the fact that I know if something is going to happen. I have released the need to see a trophy, because the need to see a trophy meant that I am doing a lot of resisting work. I am pushing against things to make things happen. And when I resist, then I put myself in control. And as Ernest Holmes mentioned, he said, could any of us thinking about something make it happen right here and now? So the words were, and it's a biblical verse which said, could any of us, here it is, who by taking thought can add one cubit to his stature, right? So, yes, thought is very creative, right? That's how the world works. That's how we have this room here. Someone sat down and said, we can make a hotel. And they had they had everything within them to dream, to imagine, to express hope, to express desire. So they didn't sit there and thought, I want to build a hotel and see it appear. They had to find about the land, they have to get license and permissions and lots of stuff going. But that is where, when something goes out, that's the beginning. That is, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. I speak my word, and I speak God into action. And this is what we do on a daily basis. We know the rules. The rules are that it's a creative universe. The rules are the universe conspires to make things happen. The rules are, if I want good, I envision, I intend, I have intentions for good, and I see a good picture out there. How am I going to get from here to there? Who, by taking thought, can add one stature to his, can add one cubit to his stature? So, yes, we take thought for the right reasons, and I'm saying right reasons, not for making a judgment, because I cannot tell you what's right or not. But we take thought for wanting what we want at the end. But we have a point where when we take thought, we have to let the universe happen. We have to let creation happen. We have to allow a pathway so that we can more clearly see true non-resistance, how am I going to get from here to there? And that's where I let go of the thought of adding anything to my stature. God knows I don't need anything inside of myself. So I'm going to let go of that, right? So, and Sims also said, so it's a mental attitude, right? And faith is the way you think, all right? So he talks about faith being consciously, definitely, and deliberately induced, and wanting betterment for ourselves. And faith is a mental attitude, and it isn't a new kind of underwear. He was spunky as well, in his homes was. He said, it isn't a new kind of underwear or something you eat. It is the way you think. Faith is thought moving consciously, definitely, and for a specific purpose. And if it is real faith, he had some prejudices also, accepting the outcome of the purpose. Oh my God, this one gave me a lot of goosebumps. So you know just as much as I do. So you know just as much about this as I do. The only difference is that I am not afraid to talk about it in public. And thank God for him. Thank God I found him how many years after his death, but he was just as alive and available and ready to teach me. As one of my teachers, as we talked about two weeks ago, I chose Wayne Dyer. But I didn't, Ernest Holmes has been my life changer. He has really brought the concepts that I needed to know, that I needed, that my consciousness needed to evolve into who I am. There was nothing wrong with the Gail before, who grew up in a Christian church and all that. I learned so many beautiful things that even now I still can call on Jesus. And when I say Jesus, I am not talking to a man. I am talking to that Christ consciousness within me. Because the Jesus that I know is going to make things happen for me. The Jesus that I know has been there and supported me. God is all there is. There is not a space where God is not. And so if I can call on God, if I can call on the universe and say, I need to feel loved, I need to feel protected, I need to have abundance in my life or whatever, I know I am calling to a deeper, more creative God, more creative Jesus, all right? So as we are getting ready to close, I just want to talk a tiny bit about non-resistance. And I have these little that I refuse to let go of. I've had this since 2000. This is a unity booklet, pamphlet. But it has some really good, wonderful truths in it. And I think this is where I may have seen the... So The first thing that I want to mention, and this is quote, "You who inhabit eternity should array yourself on the side of things eternal. You should know that a weak man fights and that a strong man governs himself to higher purposes." Unquote. So again, he also said, this is by Imelda Octavia Shanklin. All right. "So you mentally resist more than you physically resist. And you mentally resist more because obviously no one has control of your mind. Only you. But yeah, you have control of my punches and fists. You can get away, you can run away, you can, you know, you can choose alternatives, or I can choose alternatives if I want to physically resist. Physical resistance takes a lot of energy. So too does mental resistance. When you resist mentally, you use up so much more of your whole beingness, because everything about you has turned into resistance, mental resistance. And so you feel that, so let me just read this out. "You feel that you respect yourself so much that you would not engage in fistcuffs or in a cheapening quarrel. But you may mentally resist with a fierceness that has had, that has on the temper of your life and on the material of your body an effect more demoralizing than the pugilistic or brawling resistance." So non-resistance is not the line of least resistance generally. "By following the line of least resistance, you may be able to temporarily evade a responsibility. But no responsibility can forever be avoided. So if the thing be disagreeable in contemplation, cease to contemplate it. Go out to meet it serenely and non-resistant." So I know we have a lot of relationship problems. Not any of us in here at all, right? But we have a lot of relationship problems because I hear about it every day. And one of the things that I see happening is a lot of mental resistance. The mental resistance is saying, well, you can't control me. And if I want to do it, I'll do it. Or the mental resistance is silence and shut down and closed off and walled around and nobody can get through. Mental resistance, that's how I'm going to get through to you, right? But there is an easier way. The easier way is when you truly want to cease the disagreement, confront it. Maybe difficult, but it will follow you for the rest of your life unless you turn around and say, I'm ready to confront you. So in confronting, you are releasing that negative energy of holding and closing off emotions. You're also saying, I'm open, I'm ready, I'm willing, soft willingness, I am vulnerable. And to me, that has a big part to do with faith, because faith will also tell us, yes, we can do it. We know how to get to this point. But you got to let go. You got to be willing. And you got to be able to be open and vulnerable to not receiving the trophy. All right? So long and short, we permit faith to happen in our lives. Don't worry about how it's going to happen. When we ask for safety, we get safety. Whether we end up in a hospital or not, God knows the long plan, and this is where we can't have control. All right? God knows that overwhelming outcome for us. And that is where the non-resistance come in. Whichever way, it's never always a straight path. It's always up and down. Some of us who like roller coaster would enjoy the up and down, right? And the flair and the frills of it. And some of us, in soft willingness, would say, wherever you lead me. And I say you, meaning Jesus, meaning God, meaning the universe, meaning light, meaning Mr. Eternal, meaning anything. Wherever you lead me, I am willing to go and flow in that path, because that is me saying, I am here, the universe is here, and the universe right here, right now, is conspiring with all my friends to bring what I want, what I need, what my word is through prayer into existence. So thank you very much. Thank you.